Welcome to Speed Vector, the podcast dedicated to the art, risk, and obsession of speed flying. I'm your host, Victor Garcia, speed flyer, skydiver, cinematographer, Navy veteran, and full-time gravity junkie. Every week, we dive into the lines we fly, the gear we trust, and the stories that push us past the ridge and into the void. Whether you're just learning to launch or chasing the perfect line, this is where speed flyers come to connect, learn, and stoke the fire. This is Speed Vector. Is up, everybody? How goes it out there in the universe of the interwebs? This is episode 24 of the Speed Vector podcast. I don't have a guest today. This is a solo cast, which I haven't done in a long time. I'm not as excited to sit here and monologue by myself and not have anybody to talk to, but I miss putting out episodes. I feel like I've been going through withdrawals. It's only been like 2 weeks, but it feels like months, and I don't know why. I am working on getting more guests for the show lined up. It's just tough this time of year. I mean, for me especially, because my life is getting more busy, busier, English goodness, and work is about to start. Although for my Pacific Northwestern friends and pilots, along with probably Oregon, Alaska for sure, and pretty much everybody on the West Coast, excluding California, it has been a rough couple of weeks of weather. I mean, I don't know if anybody, if you guys are paying attention to the broader, weather forecast. You know, if you're not listening to this in the US, you're probably not, but there is a atmospheric river from hell that is just pummeling Washington right now in parts of Oregon. And unfortunately, it's coming from like the South Pacific Ocean, like the Southern Pacific. It's like pretty much in line with Hawaii where it's kind of coming from. I mean, it's coming up, but it's not going quite up into the Alaskan, the Gulf of Alaska. It's not going high enough into there. So the weather is, it's really warm. I mean, you know, where I live, average temperature this time of year is like in the mid 30s, and it's been like almost 60 degrees. Like it's been in the high 50s the last couple of days. I think today is cooled off a little bit. Thankfully, it's like, 48 degrees or something. But the problem with this is that, our ski area is like the place that I patrol at, we're one of the highest, if not the highest ski areas, if you exclude Mount Hood, I think, but like the summer Mount Hood ski area, not like the winter one, we're higher. And the freeze line is like at or above our peak, like our summit, which is like 62 or 6,400 feet. So I haven't started working yet because we're not open yet, which is a huge bummer. But the precipitation that has come with this atmospheric river is like absurd. We got 5 inches of snow where I work in a 5 inches of water, right? Which in snow, if it was cold enough, would be like 5 feet. We got 5 inches of water in like 24 hours. And then the next 24 hours, it was like another 2 inches. So if it was cold, man, we'd have like 20 feet of snow by now. But unfortunately it hasn't been that cold. We do have a lot of snow. It's just not quite enough at the bottom of the mountain to open. This podcast isn't about that, though. I'm not going to even say where I work because, I haven't been cleared to talk about, predictions on when we're going to open. But needless to say, I've had some time on my hands. The problem with this weather also is that I can't fly because it's raining and the wind has been gnarly. I did manage to find a little weather window this morning and get a little mini soaring session in at this local site. It's about 45 minutes away from where I live. And that was fun. It was fun to get the wing out and play in a little bit stronger, wind and do some soaring, which is definitely something I haven't spent a lot of time on. So but it feels good. You know, it feels good to be flying. I did ski the other day. Leg felt awesome. Yeah, I'm just, you know, it's been 6 months almost to the day since I broke my leg and blew up my ankle, and happy to report that, you know, things are looking pretty good. So, yeah, but anyway, I didn't come on this podcast today to talk about myself. I actually, if you listened to an episode that was probably a monologue, months ago, I talked about how I had just picked up a fly sight. I was still on a cast. Yeah, obviously wasn't flying, wasn't doing anything except for healing. But I've had some opportunity now to put it to the test. I think I've done 20 or 30 speed flights with the FlySight 2. And I just want to talk about it for a little while because I am pleasantly surprised with how well it works for speed flying. Now, is FlySight for everybody? No. I am super into data, and but I'm not like a scientist. I like data. If you look at my logbook, or if you were to look at it, you would notice that like I go into granular detail about pretty much the entire flight. One of my biggest knocks on my skydiving logbook, which, you know, has to be a little bit more official because it's, you know, it's skydiving. I mean, everything's a little bit more official in skydiving just because of the FAA and stuff that's involved. But, my biggest gripe with that book was that I didn't have enough space to like really elaborate on what happened in the jump. And I really like to get down to the, like the nitty gritty, you know, like the finer details and really dive into like what happened, because I look back on it and I'm like, cool, next time I'm going to do this. Or yeah, I remember how that felt. I was a little off. I'm going to fix it this time. With speed flying, I just took like a composition book that's graph paper, and that's what I've been using. And I've almost filled up, you know, the first comp book, and I'm, you know, just barely south of 500 speed flights now. So, you know, quite a bit of writing going on in there. I'd call it more of a diary or like a journal, maybe, if it's a little less lame. Yeah, it's definitely a diary. But anyway, so FlySight has given me the ability to like not only feel and see what a specific flight was like, right? Because a little tangent here, speed flying is very much a visual and muscle memory sport. Like, I think if you talk to any pilot, new or, you know, professional, been doing it since the beginning, they would tell you that like it's really hard to conceptualize it, and it's hard to like explain it in words. It's easier to like experience it, right? Which I totally agree with. I think it's a very muscle memory, sight picture oriented sport. But if you combine the muscle memory and sight picture with actual like data of what you did in the flight and how your wing performed and how you performed and the decisions that you made, the like fluidity of it, it's really cool. And that's what FlySight does. So I have scratched the surface barely with this thing. I mean, it is the amount of stuff that you can do is outrageous, and I'm still figuring it out. So I've got my FlySight pulled up here. I apologize. I know you guys can't see this. I do not have it set up to be seen. But basically there's a drop down menu, and you can do, I mean, I don't know, 3, 6, 9, 12. You can do like 30 different datas, like data points, right? Like, so let me just read down this a little bit. So you've got your elevation, you've got your horizontal speed, vertical speed, total speed, your course rate, course accuracy. I think that's probably more for like, that's more for wingsuit jumps, you know, like out of a plane or in, you know, like a, in like a base environment, but thinking more like from a competition standpoint. So like maybe the comp, and I'm a little out over my skis on this, but like maybe for a skydiving wingsuit competition, you know, there's a set course that's invisible, right? But it's in the sky and like it's set, and the organizer would then share that FlySight file with you, and you could upload it into, or sorry, download it into your fly site, and then you would have the ability to like fly the course because it would somehow tell you. I'll get into more of what it does, but that's probably not applicable to speed flying at this point. But if you go down from there, so you've got glide ratio, dive angle, dive rate, horizontal accuracy, vertical accuracy, speed accuracy. There's a number of satellites, which I don't really know what that is, other than, you know, it is pinging off of stuff as it's going. So probably has something to do with that. You've got your acceleration local, which then goes into a subfolder of forward, right, down, and magnitude. You've got your total energy, energy rate, lift coefficient, drag coefficient. And then at the bottom, there's a wingsuit like tab, and then there's a speed tab, speed score, accuracy. So this device was originally made for wingsuiting, and it was adopted eventually by canopy pilots in the skydiving world because of how accurate it is, even when you're close to the ground, which is incredible. I have been around the top canopy pilots in the world, in the skydiving world, 10 times maybe. And I really pay attention to what they do, because when I was skydiving, that was kind of the road I wanted to go down. But even since then, you know, still flying parachutes, still speed flying, there's a lot of parallels. So I really pay attention to how canopy pilots, especially on like the top end, what they do, how they do it, why they do it, right? If I have the ability to talk to them, like I will ask very specific questions, if they'll answer them, not like how do I do an 810, but just, you know, what are you looking for when you're rolling out? Like, what's your sight picture? Where are your eyes? Where are your legs? What's your body doing? What are your hands doing? You know, stuff like that. I noticed that all of the top CP pilots in the world were running a FlySight too. And it sparked my interest. I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe this is something that's feasible for the speed flying world. I will say expensive experiment, because they're not cheap. They're like $300, I think. You can find them anywhere that skydiving stuff is sold. So like there's a Shooting Star, I think, is where I got mine. It's just like an online skydiving store. The store at Skydive Arizona, who also has other locations. I'm totally blanking on their name right now. I forget. Anyway, they've got them in store if you're there, but also you can order stuff online through them. Pretty much anywhere, like Skydive Superstore, I think that's one. I don't know, like the folks out in Texas, they've got some. Anyway, you can find them, but they're like $300, maybe $320, and not cheap, you know, definitely not cheap, definitely an investment. But I figured, why not, you know, because I'm super into the data and I want to get better at this. And I also don't want to be questioning if I have the glide ratio to get out of something, you know, like if I'm flying in a new location, say, or maybe opening up a new location that has terrain, that's got stuff that's like mandatory, like you gotta get over it, you know, to be safe. Like that, it's the kind of data I'm interested in, right? I really like the glide ratio stuff. I want to know what my speeds are, like speed at the start of a turn, speed in the middle of a turn, speed in the exit, what my rollout speed is when I'm swooping, how fast I'm swooping across the ground. I used the GoPro GPS setting a couple times, and it just didn't seem accurate, right? It's like it was kind of all over the place. Sometimes it'd be 60 miles per hour flying smaller wings, and the line specifically. Sometimes it'd be like 40, and I'm talking like same condition, same day, 20 minutes apart. Like in theory, they would be the same. And there was just a lot of like irregularity there. So, I have done, a few like mellow 90s to a swoop with the fly side. I haven't been flying as aggressively as I was before, just because I'm just not quite there yet. Post injury. And it's just mentally, it's been a bit of a challenge to start pushing it. So I'm just not, also flying a bigger wing, slower wing. But I will say that it was consistent, within that day. So, you know, I did like two or three mellow 90s with, I think with like a 15 meter Mirage 2RS. And the mile per hour was like within a few, and the conditions were the same. I was doing the same turn. You know, of course there's variables within myself, right? Like maybe I didn't have the same setup, whatever, but I will say it was consistent. What's really cool about FlySight is that you can take your files off of FlySight, like off the device, which has like a bunch of storage, by the way, and it doesn't take up a lot of space, like per lap, per flight. You can use the FlySight viewer, which is kind of like what comes, it's free, you know, you can download it on off the internet. It's like off a Wikipedia page. My Mac like freaks out every time I try to open it. It's like, this is dangerous. Like, you don't want to open this. So I have to like override it, but it's totally fine. It's safe, I promise. But you know, and basically what that spits out is like a graph. So it's, you know, just an X, Y axis. And, you know, if you have like right now, I've got acceleration, glide ratio, total speed and elevation pulled up. And when I dump my most recent flight into it, all of those lines are on the same graph. You can do that. You can have everything on one. They're all color coordinated. It's a little clunky, you know, it's not like the smoothest running. It's not like the easiest to dissect what you're looking at. Like it is what it is. It's free, you know? But you don't have to use that. And it is just like a 2D graph. Like it's nothing crazy. It's literally just like plots on a chart, basically, or plots on a graph, and that's what it is. But what you can also do is you can take that same file and convert it to something. I'm not going to try to misspeak here. Let me see. It's a .kml. So you can convert the raw data into a KML file, and you can go onto Google Earth, and basically like there's a way. It's actually like super straightforward. I'm not super tech savvy, so like if I'm able to do it, believe me, you'll be able to do it. But you can go on there and you can upload that file into Google Earth, and it shows you all the same things, except now it's overlaid on a like the map, right? And it's like the satellite image map. So I basically have one project on Google Earth that has all of my FlySight data on it, and it looks like a heat map. Like some of my flying has been in Chelan. Some of it's been around where I live. Some have been kind of in between those two places. And you literally can like zoom out and you can see all the places that you've flown. So it's really cool. It kind of reminds me of like the Strava heat map. If for any of you Strava nerds out there, there's a heat map with that. It's very similar. And it'll like basically like, I mean, it's so accurate that I've probably done 15 Chelan Airport Ridge flights with the FlySight, and I'm launching from the same spot and landing in roughly the same spot, and you can see all 15 flights. If it intersects, it intersects, but like there's a difference in where they are, and it's 3D, so they're all like floating in space, right? So I'm on the ground when I'm launching, and then now I'm in the air, and you can see the line leave the ground. Sometimes it's kind of hard to see, like you have to kind of move the map like spherically, if that makes sense. So for anybody using a computer, it'd be like shift and then, you know, grab and move the map around. But it's not on the ground. It is floating in space, which is super cool. And then there's a whole nother thing that you can do where you can actually have it run the flight from start to finish at whatever speed you want. And you can watch as you make turns, and you can watch like the symmetry of your turns, and you can like see everything you did. I mean, that one of the flights I like kind of soared because it was not necessarily on purpose. That wasn't my intention, but it was just kind of windy and I was flying like a 13 meter flame or something, which is a very efficient wing, especially in wind. And you can see how I like gained a little bit of altitude, and then I made a turn and lost it, and then made another turn, and you can like see all of this, and it's really cool. Like it's actually like, in my opinion, worth $300, because if you want to truly know what your glide ratio is with a specific wing on a specific day in a location and with, you know, the current conditions, whatever they are, like, you have that at your fingertips. And that's super cool because, I mean, obviously it changes, right? Like, density, altitude plays a factor, what physical altitude you're at. So, like, you know, if you're flying in Colorado and you're at 5,000 feet or 11,000 feet, like, the air is thinner, you know, your wing's going to fly differently. It's going to have less glide than it would at sea level. Of course, that goes without saying, but at least with the fly site, you know that your glide ratio at 11,000 feet is whatever it is. And your glide ratio at 6,000 feet is what it is. And then, you know, of course, the conditions play a factor, like I said, but it's super cool to have that at your fingertips. Let's go into the fly site website. So, okay. It comes with a bunch of stuff, but basically, they've got like samples of logged data and their wingsuit flights, but you can see like they have their speed and their glide ratio overlaid. So the speed is, you know, pretty dramatic out of the plane, slowing down and then speeding up when they take a dive and then speeding up when they are building energy to go into their flare. And then stops when they deploy their parachute. You can see the glide ratio throughout, which is very cool. And that's just two features. Like I said, right now I've got acceleration, glide ratio, top speed, or sorry, total speed and elevation pulled up. So it's four different data points within one graph. But it doesn't have to be that way. You know, it's 100% customizable. And that's the part that, like, I have been struggling with because there's just so much. And it's such a small little unit, too. Like, it's like a, let me see. Yeah, I'd say it's like an inch and a half by an inch and a half at most. And it doesn't weigh anything. It's water resistant. It's submersion up to 1 meter, 3 feet for 30 minutes. So it's damn near waterproof. Oh yeah, here you go. Size 50 millimeters by 50 millimeters by 17 millimeters. So I don't know, whatever that is. Is it an inch? I don't know. Might be less. Might be more. There is an accelerometer, a gyroscope, a magnometer, a barometer. It does humidity and temperature. It's got 2 gigs of storage, like I said. Batteries up to 6 hours of operation time, dimensions, water resistant, like I said, and there is an audio output. So like and this is probably more for the skydiving world, but you could in theory run this, you know, with, in speed flying, you would just need some headphones, but I know a lot of guys hook them up to their audibles, like their audible altimeter in the skydiving world, like in the canopy piloting world, and even maybe even the wingsuit world, I'm sure. And it'll actually like talk to you. So I don't know what it says. I'm sure it's something that you'd have to set up. But like I said, I don't know how to code. And I don't think you have to code anything with this. I think you can just like go on their website and find the code that you need. Like if you wanted to run audio output and just drag and drop it into like somewhere. There's a million videos on YouTube and on their website that explain how to do like the super in the weeds stuff. I haven't gotten there yet just because it's not really applicable to me at this point, but it is something that I'm curious about. I'm in no way affiliated with FlySide, by the way. I have reached out to them. I'd love to get the inventors of it, the creators of it on the podcast just to hear their story. And, you know, I think that it's super cool for speed flying. I think that like, and this is coming from someone that like, I flew with a Vario a few times because I wanted the like data for after to put on Google Earth to see what I was doing. It just doesn't work. Like, to be honest, they're not fast enough. Cause like, think about it, right? Like a Vario is designed for paragliding and for like, you know, I don't know, hang gliding. And it's measuring like barometric pressure, right? So if you're going up or you're going down, whatever, it has some GPS components, but it's not pinging as fast as the FlySight. I don't know what the FlySight ping rate is, but it's like ridiculous because otherwise it would miss stuff. Like there would be gaps in the data and there just isn't, which blows my mind. Excuse me. Like I said, not affiliated with them. I paid out of pocket for mine. And I'm only putting this out there for you guys to just, you know, if you're looking for a way to track data and to really get into the weeds of your flying, this is probably the best bet right now. There might be some other option that's like designed for paragliding that pings faster, but it's $300. I don't know what the going rate is on like a high-end Vario, but like the one that I bought, I think was like $50. It's like, and that could be why it didn't work so well. It wasn't very much money, you know, and you kind of get what you pay for, but in my mind, what FlySight is capable of doing is very much more than what it costs. I mean, I don't think I would have spent like $500 on it. Definitely not like $1,000. But $300 seems reasonable considering how much it actually gives you. So to me, it's kind of like if you're at all interested, it might be worth it. As far as installation went, it does come with like screws and like a base plate for the inside of your helmet. It also comes with some really, really hardcore 3M double-sided tape, kind of like a GoPro, but more. And that's what I've been running. Obviously, if I lose it, that'd be a huge bummer. I could drill holes in my helmet, but I really wasn't sure if I wanted to. I might go back and do that now, just because I've got it on my camera flying helmet from skydiving. But you know, I mean, I don't know. It's not that big of a deal. Like if you have a drill, you can do it, right? It's not like complicated. But I didn't know if I wanted to do it. I think now I will, just because it's kind of proven itself to me, and I think I'm gonna keep running it for as long as it, you know, lasts. But you do have the option of just using adhesive 3M double-sided, like super sticky stuff, super sticky tape, or drilling. So installation was easy. And then I made the mistake one time in Chelan of turning it on and then not turning it off between flights. It is, it's really simple. There's an on off button, you know, you push it, it blinks, the little green light blinks. It's basically looking for the satellites. When it goes solid green, it is recording and ready to go. And then you just tap the off switch again and it turns off. It takes 2 minutes or so. I haven't like measured it, but it's about 2 minutes, I would guess, for it to actually find the satellites and be ready to go. The problem is if you don't turn it off, it's recording all of it. So like, I think one time I hiked and then like the next lap, I got a shuttle. So when I went to look at the data, it was all screwed up because I went 70 miles per hour in the car, in the back of the van, you know, so it picked that up. And then, you know, the hike, it picked up. So it just like dilutes everything and it kind of makes it like not accurate. Right. Because it doesn't know that you're not flying. It just is recording because that's what it does. So if you don't turn it off between, you might run into some issues. So just a heads up, if anybody does get this and thinks they can just leave it on. I know a lot of canopy pilots and wingsuit pilots and stuff turn on the ground and then get in the plane. Some turn on in the plane. I think the speed flying world, we don't have to worry so much about like, you know, interference with, you know, it not picking up satellites in time, unless you're way out in the middle of nowhere, which even then you'd probably be fine. It probably pays to turn it on, you know, right when you get to launch. And then when you land, when you take your helmet off, right, turn it off. It's just my 2 cents. It seems to be working better that way. And then like the graphs and the Google Earth and stuff doesn't get all like screwed up and convoluted with like random data that isn't applicable to the flights. I don't know. That's up to you guys. But I wish I had like a discount code or something for you. I don't. But if you do buy a FlySight and they ask like where you heard about it from, just plug the podcast, because I am trying to get them on the show. And I would love to be affiliated with them because I think it's such an awesome piece of kit that is only going to help pilots, you know. I haven't done a barrel roll with one, but I do know that you will be able to see the symmetry of the barrel roll. You'll be able to see how fast you were going in the entrance, in mid-turn, and the exit. And I think that that's like super cool. I also know that like making bigger turns into swoop, you'll be able to see how symmetrical they were, how fast you were turning. So like, you know, if you set up slow and then you snap through the last 90, like a lot of guys do, kind of how you're supposed to be honest, you'll see that acceleration and you'll see it tighten up. And that's just like, to me, that's like invaluable. And I think that is why the top guys and gals in the CP world are running them, because it is truly a piece of kit that, you know, it exists, right? Like it's 2025. We have all this technology at our hand, at our fingertips. Like, why not use every available resource to make us better and safer pilots? Emphasis on better pilots, right? It's not all about being safe, although that is really important, of course, but just being better, right? Because if you think, you know, you do something, you think you did it one way, you see a video, an outside video of you doing it, and you're like, oh, it didn't feel like that at all. Like, it felt completely different. Like, I'm shocked that it looked that way, you know, whether good or bad, right? The fly site's almost like having just data points, but from a third person view, even though it's attached to you, if that makes sense. So anyway, I'm going to stop ranting about this, but I did want to put out an episode about the fly site just after having used it for, you know, 30 or so flights. I don't know how many I've used. I haven't used it every single one of them, but I have a good amount of data now from it. And, I've learned a lot from it. So, yeah, man, that's about it. I'm hoping that the ski areas open soon. I'm hoping the white stuff starts flying here, and it is going to slow down. The podcast is going to slow down in the winter just because I don't have the same amount of time that I do in the summer. But with that being said, if anybody out there is interested in coming on the show that thinks, you know, they have an interesting story or they have a certain topic they want to talk about and they're knowledgeable on it, reach out to me, hit me up on Instagram and let me know, because there's only one of me and there's a million people out there. And I really, sometimes struggle finding the right people to have on the show. I'm not picky, you know, I mean, I do a little bit of vetting just to make sure that people aren't like, you know, completely out in left field and don't know what they're talking about. But I'm not opposed to having, you know, newer pilots on either. Like, I think that this community is so cool because it's small, and there is a growing amount of knowledge that's coming out on the internet, and there's a growing amount of really experienced pilots that are, you know, starting to instruct. And I think that it's such a cool time to be alive and be in the sport, because we're in the golden age. I've said this so many times, but like, it is truly booming, and we're right on the cusp of it going mainstream in a certain sense. And not that that's like the goal, right? But it does help, right? Like, knowledge is power, and knowledge is also safer piloting, and safer piloting means more speed flying, right? And that, at the end of the day, like, we just want to fly, you know? I mean, I'm speaking for everybody, but like, for me, like, I just want to fly. So how can I do this for as long as possible? And leading back to the fly site, I think the fly site helps with that. So if it's something you're interested in, reach out, let me know, you know, like, I'm down to have a conversation about it. If anybody has any questions, I'm not an expert, you know, but I'm not an expert with fly sight, right? But I have a decent amount of reps with it now to where I can speak on it, at least to a certain extent. If you have specific questions, let me know. If I don't know, I'll tell you. But yeah, anyway, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for being here. Appreciate all your support. Just surpassed 2,000 downloads, which is super rad. I'm really fighting the urge to add or to turn on advertisements. There's, you know, a way that I can just flip a switch and then all of a sudden there's random ads playing throughout the show. And I don't know, it kind of bothers me when I'm listening to a podcast and that happens. So I'm trying to avoid it. I'm going to push it off for as long as possible. If there's any brands out there that want to sponsor the podcast that are like stoked on it, reach out, DM me. I'll send you my email or phone number or whatever. And let's have a chat. Cause even though I'm not trying to make money off this necessarily, money does, you know, help push the show forward. So, yeah, any little or big brands out there that want to be a part of this, let me know. I'm open to it. And we'll go from there. But until next time, folks, fly safe, have fun, and see you out there. Peace.